You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for January 12th, 2011. This is episode 166, a chatter-free podcast. Welcome back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. Good to have you back. And my name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology, but not just technology, technology in the world of ministry. And joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. It sounds like you have a little cold you're fighting there.
Yeah, something about wintertime in Minnesota. I think colds go along with the ride.
Inside so. And outside. And just before the show, I made you turn down the heat in your house.
Yep, I'll be shivering through the show, but we'll have good audio quality, so that's what's important.
Very impressive with Skype. It basically gave a little notification that you had background noise. I didn't know it would do that.
Popped right up and said, Skype doesn't like the way your call sounds, apparently.
Okay, so fix it. So
that's right.
If we hear other chattering noise, then we know what that is, too.
Yeah, that would be my tea.
Exactly.
So, hey, I got a quick techie question for you this morning, Martin.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you are having more spam on your Gmail account lately. I seem to have noticed an increase in spam getting through, not being caught by the spam filters on Gmail.
I can't say that I have. I've been really impressed with Gmail's spam filtering, and that's an email that I throw around a lot. So. If I look at any one time in my spam filter, let's see, what have I got? 231 unread spam messages, but I can't say that I have.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was just me or what, but I have also been very, very impressed with their spam filtering. The last probably 2 or 3 weeks, I've been getting 5 or 6 that make it through each day, which is a pretty high volume for Gmail. So I guess I'll just continue to monitor it. I'm just curious to see what your experience was.
No, I can't say that I have. And I've been reading articles lately that that spam is down in general, which is a little bit surprising, you know, that spammers are recognizing that fewer and fewer of their efforts are getting through. So that's a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
Well, keep us posted on your spam travels.
Yeah, there you go. Will do.
All right. We're talking book today.
That's right. We are back to Leading 21st Century Schools, a book written by Lynn Shrum and Barbara Levine, and we have made it to chapter 5. We do a chapter a month, and if you haven't been following along with our book reading, you can get to all of those on the podcast website at wellstech.wells.net, and we have a special tag for them, the tag books, that you can get to all of the history of our discussion of our books. Mm-hmm. And so this week, chapter 5 is Instructional Strategies for Teaching and Learning with Technology. So a lot more hands-on kind of mashup,
yep.
Even kind of instructional ideas that you can use in the classroom.
Yeah, some of the nitty-gritty. You know, what tools to use. So if a teacher were to say to themselves, hey, I'm buying into this 21st century stuff, and that I've got to kind of get on the wagon, what do I do next? There's some very simple and time-tested now tools like WebQuest that has been around for a long time. And the good part about that is there's a lot of materials out there. So it's not just this new technology that you have to learn and try and figure out how to use. Many, many teachers now have used, you know, things like WebQuest for a number of years, and there are so many WebQuests out there and lesson plans that it's really simple to grab one and get going.
That's right. You can go to webquest.org or questgardens.org and search on any topic and find already created and tested WebQuest. And if you aren't familiar with WebQuest, we found a whole video series, WebQuest 101, out on YouTube, and we'll link to that first video, and you can go from there and learn more about WebQuest. But in a nutshell, they're a lesson that's presented on the internet and that include internet research and higher level thinking skills, you know, not just go to this web page and play a game, but actually, you know, do research and draw conclusions from your research to teach a lesson. So getting out of the book and onto the net and making use of all the great resources that are out there. I found one called Technology Over Time. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes so you can see an example of what a WebQuest is. And they're available in every subject area. So if you're looking to enhance a particular lesson that's coming up, then check them out.
Yeah, there was a couple interesting bullet points there on the web in the WebQuest section. On if people are following along at home, page 84 about what it isn't. And you know, sometimes people think, well, this is just a series of links that you're asking your kids to go through, and it really isn't more. It's a lot more than that. And the two bullets that I was kind of interested in or intrigued by say it isn't a research report or a step-by-step science or math procedure, having learners simply distilling websites and making a presentation about them isn't enough, and it isn't a series of web-based experiences, having learners go look at the page, then play a game, or go here and turn their names into hieroglyphics, you know, not that kind of thing. The web quests really need to require higher-level thinking skills, and by definition, that's what a web quest is it. It really challenges the students to think, and rather than just click through links and report on what they saw.
Yep. So good stuff out there, and certainly webquest.org is a great place to start if you're looking for WebQuest, or you can just Google it and see what you come up with.
So. The next one that they talk about, I wish they had when I was around, because you get to visit some really cool places in a virtual fashion. They call it virtual field trips. And some of the examples they use were really nice. For instance, the Forbidden City or Ellis Island or the Pyramids, all kinds of these quote-unquote virtual field trips that you could take from the comfort of your own classroom, but still give kind of a media-rich view of a different location, and along with that, obviously, the history behind it and, you know, the sights and the sounds, and boy, what a great thing. We had, all we had, you know, was the encyclopedia or maybe small pictures or text in a textbook.
Yeah, the encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. What a concept.
Yeah.
Those were the days, huh, Martin?
Yep.
virtual field trips are highlighted on the Utah Education Network at uen.org/tours, and they have a whole catalog of virtual field trips that have been put together. I found one of interest. I have all boys at my house, so I know they would love castles in medieval times.
Oh, cool.
So take a trip to a castle, learn castle terminology, learn how to defend your castle.
Castleology, yes.
What life is like in the castle, etc. And then they challenge the students throughout that. They give them assignments embedded in the field trip pages, you know, to write a paragraph about how you would defend your castle or whatever. Mm-hmm. So very well done. And, you know, not too many of us are going to get to visit castles from medieval times. Mm-hmm. So having this ability to go there via the web is an impressive thing.
Yep. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Then they went on to talk about something that I kind of get, but since I'm not a teacher, I think only maybe a teacher could truly appreciate what they call reusable learning objects. Sally, from your perspective, what are those?
Well, I boil it down to the regular traditional classroom, and the teachers have a lot of learning objects available to them. Like at an elementary level, maybe for mathematics, they have objects for counting and doing math manipulations. Well, this would be something similar, but in a digital format. Mm-hmm. So a whole ton of websites are out there that have virtual manipulatives or examples of different lessons and things that you can take and mold into whatever your need is in the classroom. And
kind modular approach. You're going to pick a little bit of something from here and a little something from there, put it together, and you got a lesson.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was also envisioning these lessons being on a smart board and being able to have the students come to the board and
drag them out and do the manipulatives. Play with them, right.
Things,
yeah, cool.
You know?
Very cool.
Yeah. And so there's a couple of links I want to include in the show notes. National Library of Virtual Manipulatives. Boy, that's not easy to say this morning. And the Schroeder Interactive homepage so that people can have examples of these different manipulative type objects that you can make use of in your lessons. And then finally, we want to include the Merlot.org site, which is basically a database of all these different types of learning objects where people have submitted links to learning objects from across the web. And then there's peer reviews, so you can see which ones got really high reviews. You can see how people are using them in their classrooms from their comments and things like that. So Merlot.
Nothing to do with the wine.
No.
Multimedia learning and online teaching. What it stands for. So I learned a little something. So good stuff. And that makes a lot of sense because the web is full of, I guess, learning objects where you pull them in. And now with embed code and the ability to download video and craft these things, those are valuable as long as you can find them. And these indexes are really helpful. So
absolutely. That Merlot is a great clearinghouse for that kind of thing. So.
Moving on, other resources that they're talking about in this chapter, Sally?
Well, I think just in general, you can make use of video resources that are available on the web. And, and you can find those in practically any flavor you're looking for these days. One great site to search from a teacher's perspective is TeacherTube. And that is specifically, you know, learning-oriented. It's very much like YouTube and it's in how you interact with the website. But it has an education focus, and so TeacherTube.com.
Easier to find things based on subject matter, I suppose.
Exactly, the organization and everything. Mm-hmm. But you can also use YouTube, and one way to use YouTube is by putting your YouTube videos through SafeShare.tv, which is a place where you can put the YouTube video link, and it will give you a view of the video without all the surrounding information on the screen that you normally see on YouTube and that you can't have a lot of control over. So if you want to use YouTube, maybe you want to make use of SafeShare for classroom use as well.
Yep. And finally, maybe to close out this chapter, something that I was kind of interested in are what are called open source initiatives. And we're all familiar with open source. That's where we get operating system distributions like Linux. And there's a whole suite of office products, Open Office that's open source, and all kinds of cool things that we often talk about on the show. But in this context, they're using open source tools like wikis to actually build open source textbooks or open source resources. And one thing that one resource that we read about there in the book was en.wikibooks.org, what they're calling open content textbook collection. And they talked about a little story where one class's activity was to essentially rewrite a textbook. So they took a physical textbook and they put it in wiki form. And then they used different web resources to enhance it. So obviously with a textbook, you're dealing with text and maybe a few pictures. But once you put that on the web, then you can link to different things. It can be very dynamic. You can embed video. You can have audio. You can have images, maps, all those kinds of things. So the task for this particular class was to rebuild or rewrite a textbook in wiki fashion and then share
that. This was a ninth grade classroom, Martin, and they did, the title of their textbook was called A Broken World, and it's from the beginning of World War II to the Cold War. And so I think you want to check this out. Teachers in the listening audience will be quite impressed with the work that they did. And not only gathering the resources and writing the textbook themselves, these ninth graders, but they also did presentations and videoed themselves doing these presentations.
Cool.
So the videos they're linking to are the kids explaining these topics. And so I really applaud their efforts. It's quite impressive.
Yep. All right. Well, that is Chapter 5. So next month we move along with Chapter 6. And again, there are just, you know, one of the things that really impresses me about this book is just the very concrete examples, you know, that they provide. So it's not just philosophical conversations about education and technology. They show actual examples of projects that use these tools. And they get a little bit more into leadership next time. How do you lead a school that is interested in meeting the needs of the 21st century student?
It'll be real valuable for our listeners. So looking forward to that discussion as well.
Yep. Our interview today is a neat one. We enjoyed talking with Greg Schmill, who is the director, one of the directors or co-director of the Commission on Lutheran Schools here in the Synod office. And Sally, you ran across Greg presenting out Your Way, and we kind of coaxed him into talking us through that presentation.
That's right. He presented at the Minnesota District Teachers Conference last fall and did a presentation called Bridging the Generation Gap, which I thought would be of great interest to our listeners.
Mm-hmm. So let's listen to our conversation with Greg about the generation gaps and how we should actually view those in context of, you know, all the generations now that exist within our world, up to 5 generations. Joining us today on the show is Greg Schmill, Administrator for Commission on Lutheran Schools. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Very, very good of you to join us. I know you've got a very busy schedule, a travel schedule to boot, and you're still a commuter, right?
I am. I still reside in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and come down for 3-4 days at a time and stay with family and friends and in the area.
I introduced you as the Administrator for Commission on Lutheran Schools. What exactly does that mean? What does your day look like?
Well, as the administrator, actually, they've changed our name now to director. We're the director,
okay.
Director of Lutheran
Sorry
Schools.
About that. I'm trying to stay up. I'm trying to keep up.
Well, we like to change names and alphabet soup here at the Wells on occasion. So our role in the Commission on Lutheran Schools is to help our schools, help our congregations actually advance the gospel in a couple different areas by providing resources for our schools, by providing training within our schools and to our teachers and principals, and then to provide a lot of personal assistance. It's kind of an administration / leadership role for our schools.
Mm-hmm.
So a typical day can be providing help one-on-one to board chairmen and to principals and teachers who call for assistance. We are responsible for producing the call list, which is a big part of our time right now, putting together the call list for our area Lutheran high schools and our Lutheran elementary schools and our congregations that are looking for staff ministers. In addition, Jeff Inniger, the Associate Director of Lutheran Schools, heads up our accreditation program, which we try to roll out to as many schools as possible. And our big initiative right now is the Strengthening Educators for Ministry, where we're reaching out to help our beginning teachers get stronger, help our principals develop leadership skills, and then eventually work with our veteran teachers and help them work with coaches and mentors to develop a professional development plan and continue to grow as teachers.
Maybe you go a little bit further back in time for us and you know, some of your previous experiences, maybe how the Lord worked through, you know, your previous positions to bring it to this point.
Well, I'm over 30 years now as a teacher and administrator in our Wells schools, and started out in Minnesota as a teacher principal and headed down south to Florida and was a teacher principal down there, and then came back kind of unusual in the Wells, but came back to my alma mater, back to Manitowoc Lutheran High School, where I did a variety of things, English teacher, guidance director, assistant principal, all sorts of different things that the Lord blessed me to be able to do there. And then my life shifted a little bit as I began serving as the director of Forward with Lutheran Schools, kind of the mystery organization of the Wells. But Forward with Lutheran Schools serves and continues to serve on a limited basis as an agency that works with individual congregations to begin Lutheran elementary schools and then also to strengthen those schools. And that took me into synod work, into administrative and leadership work with our schools. And then the Lord saw fit a year ago in March that I was called to be the director of Lutheran schools. So I've been doing this full-time as the permanent director, so to speak, of Lutheran schools since April of last year. And I guess as we look back at God's handiwork, well, he gave me the experience of working as a teacher and a principal both in the Midwest and out of the Midwest. He gave me high school experience. And then he gave me those 3 years as Forward with Lutheran Schools consultant and journeying around and getting a sense of what's happening in our schools throughout our synod. And I guess I look back and I say, well, the Lord was preparing me for something, and this seems to be it.
Very good. Well, we're happy to have you join us here on the Wells Tech Podcast, Greg. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you today was because I had the privilege of sitting in on one of your presentations recently. I was at the Minnesota District Teachers Conference back in October, and you did the closing day keynote address, and it was titled Bridging the Generations. And I thought some of that information that you shared there would be great to share with our Wells Tech listeners as well. Maybe you can start out by telling us the punchline. What are the three gigantic generational truths that you shared with us that day?
Well, the presentation on bridging the generational gap forms its basis on the idea that there are different generations that are active in our Lutheran schools and congregations. And these different generations, truth number one is that people form their core values and beliefs from ages 0 to 20. And when they share a lot of core values, that becomes a generation. So the boomers had similar experiences from ages 0 to 20, similar family situations, similar school situations, similar things going on in our American culture that group them together as a generation. The second big truth is that the longer lifespans of people that the Lord is allowing us to have means that there's five active generational groups in America right now, and my belief is that four of them are very actively involved with our schools. And the third big truth is that those core values that each generation has, it's astonishing the influence that it has on the decisions and the choices and the priorities of those groups. And so the key to the presentation is that we need to, as teachers and leaders in our schools, understand each generation. We need to seek first to understand, and when we understand the generation and how they formed and what those core values are, then we can build bridges with that generation. So instead of wondering why everybody's not like me and wondering why people don't think the way I do and have the same priorities, we start to understand that each generation had a different set of formative years and thinks about things a little bit differently. And when we understand those generational differences, we can build bridges and work together better and serve our Lord together better with that common understanding.
Greg, how do schools who get this, who understand this and take what you've provided, or obviously there's information all over on generational studies and kind of implement that within an educational setting. How does that school, or how does that classroom, or how does that administration look different than one that's not?
I think it's really a mindset where you look upon those differences as a wonderful opportunity rather than looking upon them as a source of frustration and something to, you know, forgive me, but to grumble about in mm-hmm. the faculty room or to grumble about when we're together. And
right.
And it's a mindset of saying, what, this diversity is a wonderful blessing from God, because there's certain gifts in each generation that we can use to benefit our ministries. So I think it's going to be the way we approach things and the way we approach the differences. I think a big part that you'd see the difference is that we're going to step back before we start to get frustrated and try to understand where parents are at and where our students are at, and for the younger generation, understanding where those boomers are at and why they're responding the way to some of the things that are going on. And then again, when we understand it, then we can work together and help each generation to do what needs to be done in ministry.
So clearly there's choices to be made as far as how to communicate, what to communicate, and even some of the tools in the classroom that are used to connect with the kids.
Absolutely, and that's the big connection to technology. Different generations are using technology differently and responding to technology. Again, these are sweeping generalizations
right.
about generations, but generally true, always exceptions within the generations. But different generations are using technology differently and looking at it differently. And so if we understand each generation, we can then take our communication and make it fit the way they're ready to receive it.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we need to dive in a little bit to these four main generations that you outlined in your presentation. And one thing I thought it was interesting, you mentioned it a little in what you just said, is that these generations are parents and grandparents, there are students, but you also brought out in your presentation that there are coworkers, our fellow teachers. So as we deal with one another up in the faculty room, we're encountering some of these generational issues as well. So just kind of a all-encompassing look at all these different generations. I thought that was really neat. So maybe the older generations, the builders and the boomers, how might technology help us relate to them as a school?
Okay, well, for the purpose of the presentation, I broke it down into four generations. The silence and builders are generally those who are 65 or older. They're the patriarchs of our congregations. They were probably on the building committee that helped build the school, and now they have grandchildren or great-grandchildren in the school. And we communicate with them by realizing that when they look at technology, they look upon it as a way to stay in touch with relatives and friends, to use email. And so we can certainly get these people on our email lists and keep them connected, but they're probably the print generation. So when we want to communicate with the great-grandparents, with the silence and builders, we're probably going to stick with print technology, and we're going to keep in mind that having a little bit bigger font is appropriate. Just uh-huh. had a voters meeting recently where one of the silence raised his hand and said, I can't read this. The font was way too small. It was okay for one generation, but not for another. So that generation, we're going to communicate in print. We're going to tap.
By the way, that generation somehow includes me now, too.
Me also. I need a little bit more light on this, please.
That's right.
So we will make sure that we're, again, they're using email to communicate with friends and to stay in touch with family, but generally print is the way to go mm-hmm. there. They want to leave a legacy. Can we find some way for them to leave a legacy in our school and connect with our school, some intergenerational activities and things that we can do?
Right.
The next group are the baby boomers. Well, you can't read too much nowadays without hearing about the baby boomers, 10,000 of them ready to retire every day. These are, in many congregations, still the leaders. They still are the presidents on the church council and so on, and what I typically saw when I journeyed around with Forward with Lutheran Schools, they're struggling to hand that baton of leadership off to the next generation. And so, you have to realize that many of them are saying it's time for somebody else to take over, but at the same time, they're used to mm-hmm. calling the shots. So helping people transition and helping them pass that baton of faith, baton of leadership, if you will, to the next generation. Intergenerational mentoring, getting them involved in the school. Print still works, again, making it big enough, sharp enough contrast, connecting with them electronically. They're a generation that looks at things and says, I can find information on the internet. I can find things quicker and easier than I ever could before in my life. So having good information about your school and school activities is important for communicating with baby boomers.
Very good. And then probably our parents in our schools fall into this next Generation X category, and they're ones that all our school leaders are always trying to deal with effectively, and so maybe you have some tips for them.
Yeah, Gen X, I broke down to age 29 to 45, and a couple things to think about there is that they are used to having data and information at their fingertips, and so to simply claim that your school does well isn't enough. You need to provide the data. To say that your school has a solid curriculum isn't enough. You need to have that on your website and have that ready to go. This is a generation that looks for value added. Yes, they are happy and excited that you have a Lutheran elementary school and their children are hearing God's word every day, but they're looking for that other extra thing, a strong music program or art. And so if you can relate and get that information to them, using all of the electronic communication you can muster, that's important for Generation X. They're also a generation that is very focused on the individual. They were raised as individuals and were told that they were special, and their self-esteem was guarded and taken care of. And so they think about things from an individual perspective. So when they come to your school, they may like your curriculum, but you know, my child would benefit from this over here or this online course, and we need in our schools to be flexible to look at ways to meet the individual needs of the students, because that's a real concern for Gen X parents. And another challenge is they want the foundational curriculum there, but they also expect their student to enjoy learning. They're very pleased when they come home and hear that their child is enjoying it. So not that everything we're going to do at school is going to be fun, but there's going to have to be some elements of enjoyment in there, as Gen X parents are going to be looking for that.
Wow, sounds like a tough group to please. There will be challenges there.
One thing that I noticed in reviewing your slide deck, and I wasn't able to hear you speak on this topic, although I hope at some point in the future to be able to do that, is that from a spiritual perspective, I would think one of the challenges as generations relate to one another is that, you know, a characteristic of almost each one of these is the self-absorbed nature, the fact that it is, you know, if it matters, it needs to kind of fit into my space in the way that I think. And there's not necessarily the sensitivity that we maybe would like across generations. So as we're thinking of communicating with coworkers or fellow congregation members or whatever, that, you know, that's an obstacle that has to be bridged. We have to think perhaps like the other generation and keep that in mind as we develop our communications, as we develop policies, as we work to lead our congregations and our schools. And I'm sure you saw that in your Forward with Lutheran Schools work.
Yeah, we are struggling, I would say, to pass that baton of leadership, both
right.
Within our schools. We have principals who are 50 and years older, and some of them are saying it's time for the next generation to grab hold of some of this leadership, but yet they're used to being in charge. So we have some challenges passing that baton of leadership. But I think we have to look upon it as each generation has tremendous gifts and tremendous blessings and ways to benefit our education. And if we can accentuate those positives, again, first by understanding what positives each group is bringing,
right.
And then accentuate those positives, we're going to, you know, we're going to be able to better, as I like to put it, stay out of the Lord's way. Stay out of the Lord's way and not build roadblocks, but instead build bridges and connections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I stress a lot to people is we have to constantly remind one another that, you know, we are teachers because we want to pass that baton of faith to the next generation. We want to teach little children about Jesus. And if we keep that focus, that's why our schools are there, and that's why we're there, and that's why God has given this crazy group of different talents and interests and backgrounds so that we can share the gospel with children. If we keep that focus, you know, then we're doing the right thing.
Yeah,
but when it
sure.
gets to be about me or what I believe or how this exactly should be done, then Satan can get in there and build a lot of roadblocks.
Yeah.
So keep the focus on the children and why we're there and why our schools exist.
Speaking just from a technology perspective, I would think that component alone really makes our generational differences even greater. You know, at no point in our history has technology advanced so quickly so that my children have no idea what an 8-track, you know, tape is, or even a cassette tape. Their children probably the same kinds of things. So they're almost talking different languages.
Yeah, very, very much so. And that, again, is all I'm maybe a little bit different, but I really enjoy getting into this and
mm-hmm.
looking at what the different generations experienced. The book that I based a large part of my presentation on, The Generational Imperative by Chuck Underwood, takes a look at each generation's history. And I think we, again, it helps us appreciate that variety that's there. Once you understand the benefits and blessings of that variety, then you can take the time to say, all right, how can I use that set of talents in this
mm-hmm.
school? How can I use that generation's talents in our school, again, to benefit and bless the children and families that are there?
I enjoyed one of your closing comments that you drew from that book, Generational Imperative, where you commented on how each of the generations view the internet, from the silents you mentioned earlier, who like to stay in touch via email with their family, just real basic usage, all the way through the millennials, the 0 to 28 crowd. And you said they view the internet as information, entertainment, the air they breathe, and another appendage on their bodies.
Yeah.
Quite a contrast there.
It is. And again, there's different people in different generations who better reflect the other generations. But the millennials, it's an appendage to their bodies. And I made a point in one part of the presentation that as teachers of millennials, we need to realize we will probably never have their undivided attention. Never. As long as they have their phone and their text coming in and information. So that's a challenge for us as teachers. How do we connect with them? But again, how do we use that connection to technology to better teach them? How do we connect better? Because we know they're going to constantly have their cell phones there and constantly be texting. And how do we use that as an advantage in education? That's a challenge for us.
Is there an answer?
We keep chipping away. I think there are things that we can do. It's going to require that we be willing to change and that we are willing to step back and say, hey, we can do this differently. It's not the way I was doing this when I started teaching X number of years ago, but this is a better way to connect with this generation. They're learning different. They're thinking about things differently. Small snippets of time and constant input coming to the young people today. How can I tap into that and use that in my classroom? That's the challenge.
I suppose the good news is there are a ton of resources out there. We can use the internet to that advantage as well, that there are many teachers who understand that, you know, this is absolutely essential to teach in the 21st century, and that they're very free to share that information. There's thousands of blogs, and they're all willing to share ideas, and I think we're beginning to see that across the Synod, too.
Yes, we're working on an initiative here with Commission on Lutheran Schools, and taking a look at the 21st century learner and seeing what, again, our role is to develop resources and provide resources to our schools. So we're looking at a way to do that. But you're absolutely correct. There's so many things out there, and there's so many teachers trying new things. And we all have to grab what works for us and hit our comfort level, but realize that 21st century learning looks a little bit different.
Yep. Yeah, sure does. Greg, thank you so much for your time. Blessings on your continuing work and ministry here in the Synod office, and as you work with our schools, certainly an important part of our congregations and their health.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts with the people out there.
Thanks. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate your time and your insights. There is a presentation packed full of information.
Yeah, and he was willing to share that with our listeners as well. So we'll have a link in the show notes if you'd want to browse his presentation and go over some of the points that he mentioned and maybe get a little bit more in depth with the information he shared there.
And certainly if you are on the steering committee for your teachers' conference or convention, Greg would be an awesome resource, and I think, Sal, you'd agree that this would be a great presentation to have.
Absolutely. I was really fired up to bring this information back to our school and you know, just kind of take a step back and look at all the different age levels that we're serving and trying to engage in our school.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to news in tech. Lots of news coming out of Las Vegas this week.
That's right. This was the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Is that what that acronym stands for?
Yep.
This is the big one that they always have right after Christmas, where they announce a lot of the new technology that's coming up on the horizon, and just a virtual geek fest where you can go and just enjoy all this new technology. So there was lots of news reports there. One of the sources I always look to is CNET for computer and technology reviews and things. And of course, CNET was on the spot at CES 2011, and they actually analyze all the different categories and come up with their picks for Best of Show. And we'll have a link to their Best of Show awards in the show notes, their number one pick for the best overall was the Zoom tablet. And apparently this CES was just full of tablets. Mm-hmm. And the Zoom came out on top. It's a Motorola tablet that's promised to have a new Android operating system specifically for tablets. Right. But the catch is, what they had at CES was really just running animations of what it's going to look like. They didn't have a working model.
Not quite
model
ready
yet
for prime time, which is a lot of what CES is. It's kind of concept things that some of them never see the light of day, but it sounds like some of these products, especially on CNET's list, are real and will come out almost all of them this year at some point. So this is kind of an iPad competitor. Probably the a similar size, and it's Zoom with an X, X-O-O-M. So it'll be interesting to see how the tablet space shakes out this year as everybody's kind of trying to catch up to the iPad at this point. So,
and of course, the Zoom and others that run Android, at least, are going to have flash capabilities, which Apple doesn't have on their devices. Mm-hmm. So interesting competition heating up there.
Yep. That's it for CES. There was a bunch of other stuff, and we'll put a couple links in the show notes on some other lists that came out. That's always kind of interesting to look a little bit into the future. And I know a lot of the people who listen to this show are kind of gadget hounds, so this is kind of cool stuff to read through.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to picks of the week, Sally.
Well, my pick of the week is going to be a blog post that I came across over the holidays, and it is iOS apps for productivity and fun. This is a list that was put together by Wesley Fryer, who's a big educational technology blogger and very respected in that whole space. And he put together this list for a workshop he was doing on December 27th and just put it out there on his blog. There's not a lot of explanation as to why he picked these particular apps, because obviously he wanted you to come to his workshop and get the live presentation. But I think it's an excellent list. Right off the bat, I was really impressed at how he presented it. He has this image on the blog with all of the different app icons. It looks like it's actually on an iPod or iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually click on the icons and go directly to the Apple Store and read about it, read the reviews, be able to download them to your device. And then below that, he has the list organized. He has apps for productivity, for photo editing, for audio, news, media, e-text, gaming, music and arts, utilities, geography, science and math. So there's something on this list for just about everybody. And, you know, I think when I first got my iPod Touch and I spent a lot of time downloading apps, and then I got kind of tired of that whole try them out, maybe they make you crash or whatever, you know. And so now I'm a lot more selective about what apps, and to have someone pick out apps that they say they've tried out and they've identified as being good out of the, what, tens of thousands of apps that are available out there.
Yep.
This is a pretty valuable list, and I did find some new things that I'm going to be checking out. And I think as teachers, you would find some that are certainly applicable for classroom iPod Touches or iPads. And obviously, as individual users, there's going to be utilities and productivity apps and things, maybe something new that you haven't come across yet.
Yep. And I didn't count how many he's got on here, but he does kind of total up how much all of these cost. And looks like for all the apps on here, and there's probably, if I had to guess,
like 50 or 60.
Yeah, I got to be almost close to 100.
Sure.
$107, total, for that many apps. And interestingly, he's got two Bibles on here.
Yep.
People interested in Bibles on your smartphone or your iPad, you may want to tune into, is it last week's show that we had a Bible show?
It is.
Yep. So we did a review of a bunch of Bibles here, and the two that he has are actually the same, YouVersion, which we talked about on the show, one for the iPhone/iPod Touch and one for the iPad. So interesting. Yeah, I like the way he's laid out the site.
And even though the total cost is $107, that is for the paid-for apps, and many of the ones on the list are
Most
free.
Most of them are free, so. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So don't let the price scare you away. And even if you were, $107 is not much if you wanted to invest in some good apps. So
depends on what you need. Yep, exactly. Yep. So good pick.
All right.
My pick is also smartphone related, and that is a little handy utility if you are interested in developing Android apps. Android is quickly becoming the operating system that is on most smartphones at this point, even surpassing the iPhone. So if you go into a store these days and you're looking at a smartphone that's not the iPhone, chances are it's going to have Android running on it. Which is an operating system put out. It's an open source operating system put out by Google. And this little tool at feed.nu, it's in beta, but I tried it, works beautifully, allows you to, with little or no programming skills, take your blog or your RSS feed, and what I did was took the Wells Streams RSS feed, which is all of our podcasts. So this podcast, Daily Devotion Through the Bible in 3 Years, Military Devotions, that RSS feed, run it through this application, and it automatically creates an app for you. It generates an APK file, which is the application file that you need to upload to Google or the Android Marketplace. And it does the rest of the work. It creates the interface. It allows you to customize it so you can add your own logos and so on and so forth. But it does the work for you. You do have to have an Android Marketplace developer account, which costs $25. So if you want to do this, you're going to be in for $25. But the rest of this, it really does it for you. And if you want to check this out, if you have an Android phone, go to the Android Marketplace and search for Wells Podcasts, and you will find the app that I created, which works just like advertised. So you can see all of the podcasts that are coming out. You just sync it up, or it can sync automatically. So you will see the latest and greatest, and you could listen to this podcast or the Daily Devotion or whatever as they come out right on your Android phone. So kind of a cool experience.
So I guess Android doesn't have like oversight of, there's no waiting period or anything like
you
that.
You uploaded it and I uploaded it, and 10 seconds later I could search for it in the marketplace.
How cool is that?
Yep. So as a result, there's a lot of junk in the Android Marketplace, and sometimes it's tough to find stuff if you're not quite sure what you're looking for. But it's that easy. Now, there are some marketplaces opening up that are what are called curated. So I think Amazon is creating an Android Marketplace, and that will be kind of a you have to submit it, and if they like it, then they'll approve it. So if you're interested in more of an approved or safer place, those kinds of things are coming out.
So if you shop there, you know it's been at least looked at.
Yeah, it's not going to be malware or some kind of
sure.
junk. So they'll at least have some kind of vetting process, is the sense that I get.
Okay. Good to know.
All right. Let's move on to community feedback. We got a ton this week.
Yes, we do. We're happy to hear our listeners communicating with us. First up, we heard from Nancy Marks, who's at Emmanuel in Missoula, Montana. And she wrote to us about our QR code contest, which we held back in the month of December. And she said, I'm a professional development coordinator for schools in 7 counties in western Montana. And she's also on the church council at Emmanuel Lutheran in Missoula. And she enjoyed our podcast and has used many of the strategies professionally, personally, as well as part of her ministry. She especially enjoyed the barcode reader contest and incorporated the clues into confirmation class the week before Christmas. So she says she looks forward to our podcast each week, and she learns and shares it with others. So that's great to hear. And Nancy, we really appreciate you taking the time to let us know that, and let us know you enjoyed our QR code contest. That's really encouraging.
Warm Sally's heart.
That's right. So, also on our Wells Tech listserv, there was some discussion about SnapGrades. SnapGrades is an online grading program, and really Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith and Fond du Lac, just kind of floated the question out to the listserv. Has anybody been using it, and what's your feedback? And I know when we had Ryan Rothge on a few weeks ago, he talked about using Snap Grades, and he really liked it. On the listserv, we heard from Larry Selno, who's at Holy Trinity in Wyoming, Michigan. And he said, our school uses Snap Grades and loves it. The parents love being able to access grades and other info from home. We don't use much more than the grades and a little messaging. He says, I do have my memory work listed for the year, so the parents can just go there and see the assignments. But teachers can include lists of all their assignments if they want using Snap Grades. He said, I have a parent that's been doing most of the setup, so it's been very easy for us teachers. We have the report cards printed directly from that program. So that's great feedback, and really encouraging to hear that a program is that easy to use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love that parent volunteerism in the school as well.
That's right. Really important.
Really great to hear as
yep.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So. Next up, we heard from Mark Jackson, who works with the Glow Bible. You might remember that it was about a year ago that we talked with Nelson Saba from Glow Bible and heard all about this brand new software, this interactive multimedia Bible experience that they call the Glow Bible. And they've had some really exciting news at Glow in recent weeks. They were selected by Microsoft to be featured at the Consumer Electronics Show on their Windows 7 Slate devices. So Microsoft's coming out with a tablet, and Glow was one of the feature software to demonstrate that tablet's capabilities. So kudos to the Glow Bible for being part of Microsoft's rollout, and we'll just continue to watch that space and see what else Glow has in store for us.
Yep, good stuff. If you haven't tried the Glow Bible, it's very inexpensive and great Bible class resource. It adds a lot of supplementary material to your Bible studies. It has virtual tours. You can kind of do a fly through the tabernacle. There's all kinds of pictures, and it's really kind of a nice resource as you're going through the Bible.
Next up, we heard from Laura Schweitferger. Sorry, I've probably butchered her name.
I think that's pretty close.
All right.
You got the Laura part. You nailed it.
There you go. She was actually in one of your classes that had out in Michigan for Final Web, Martin.
Right.
And she had an interesting project that I thought some of our listeners might relate to. She said, our church will be celebrating its 150th anniversary in 2013. Kudos to them for looking ahead and planning for 2013.
No kidding.
That's great.
Awesome.
She said, someone saw an anniversary DVD that a church had made that was quite neat, and she was interested in doing a similar project and was trying to research what software might be out there for doing something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
And I guess both of us were on the same page in our recommendation, Martin. The first thing that came to mind was Animoto.com.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Animoto before, but it's a really fun to use website where you can upload pictures and short video clips. You can include your own audio, or you can upload
Use some open source audio they have, right?
Open source, right. And you can actually record narrative as well, and you can add title slides and things like that. And then it produces the video for you in a really impressive format. It's hard to describe, but the video slide transitions is mm-hmm. the word I'm looking for,
yep.
are just really fun to watch and engaging. And all of the videos that I've worked with Animoto have just been very well received. So I think it would be a great way to do a church anniversary video. And we've done similar projects. Last year, we actually, for our Unity Sunday, did a recap of the entire year at our church with photos, and it was just really well received. So highly recommend Animoto.com.
Great. Thanks, Laura, for your question.
Yeah. Next up, we heard from Pastor Rob Gunther, who serves at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And he had a couple of recommendations for our Wells Tech listeners. Two products that he's using are Voxly.com, VOXLI.com, which is a voice chat room. He says there's nothing to install, nothing to register. You just go in the room and start talking. And so it sounds like a fun online application. And then in companion with that, he's using Join.me. And we've talked about Join.me before. It's a screen sharing application. And so what he does is he shares the link. And then if you want, you can combine the two. So you're actually sharing your screen and then talking via Voxley. And you can have your Bible class using a PowerPoint or maybe a smart board or whatever Word documents or whatever you'd want to share, whatever's on your screen can be viewed by anyone who has access. And then they can hear you through the Voxley chat room. So he is thinking of implementing it for his midweek Bible study, and we'd love to hear how that goes, Pastor Gunther, and really appreciate you sharing those links with us.
So Voxley works with JoinMe, is that?
Well, he's using them together.
Together, okay, gotcha.
Right, at the same time, so you're launching both applications.
So you're using the screen sharing and then the voiceover IP.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And with it being a chat room, then I'm assuming that would be like a conference call kind of setting. So you'd have multiple people in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, great idea. Very creative use of free tools that are out there.
Definitely. Next up, we heard from Pastor James Borkwart, who serves Risen Savior in Pooler, Georgia. And he had one of the more common questions that I receive. I don't know about you, Martin, but he said he's wondering if Wells Tax has any suggestions for email marketing for e-newsletters. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned Constant Contact and Eye Contact as two products that are out there, and I'm sure they're both excellent products. But our recommendation as of late has been MailChimp.com. And you can use MailChimp for free for up to 1,000 subscribers and up to 6,000 emails per month. And they just have excellent support resources. It's super easy to use. It's a lot of fun. And it's very professionally done. Your templates and color choices and things are just real high quality. So if you're looking for a solution for your congregation for e-newsletters, then I highly recommend MailChimp.com.
Very good. Yep, can't go wrong there.
And next up, we heard from this fellow named Martin Spriggs. He had a link to share with us.
We have been considering a program here in running out of the Synod office for 21st century schools and considering how we can help our Synod schools, not just Synod schools, but all of the elementary schools within the Synod, to kind of embrace, you know, some of the concepts of what 21st century schools or classrooms could look like. And I ran across an article of a case study of a classroom in Maine where they're doing a student laptop program and some of the trials and tribulations that they had in doing that and how they got funding and how they're using it and some lessons learned. Just kind of a neat sharing that they provided that really I think would be helpful for anybody to read who's considering implementing this kind of strategy, whether they be tablets or netbooks or whatever it is in the classroom. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But a nice article. This is from Mashable.
It makes me smile to think we're reading about the first implementations and the studies of them. And, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be commonplace. But
right.
It's really neat to be on that cutting edge and and to learn from the experience of these schools.
Yep.
So, good stuff. Lastly, we heard from Jeremy Probst, who is with a company that produces the Safari extension CussOff. We actually talked about CussOff when we interviewed Ryan Rothschi back on podcast number 161. And it's an extension in Safari that will get rid of any derogatory words that are showing up in your browser.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually come out with a new product. It's an iPhone app called Clean Tunes. And it lets you edit out any objectionable content from your songs on your iPhone or iPod Touch. So if you're looking to try out a new application, you might want to check out Clean Tunes, and we'll have a link to it in the App Store in our show notes.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. That does it for community feedback. And if you would like to provide some feedback to us, there are buku ways to do that. You can go to our show notes page, which is essentially a WordPress blog at wellstech.wells.net. You can simply send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. You can leave a voicemail, and that number is 405-4-WELLS, 405-367-9357. You can tag a Twitter feed with #WellsTech. We have a Facebook page and all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. So we would love to hear your feedback because that gives us new ideas for the show. Not only does it fill our community feedback time, but helps us understand what you guys are interested in. So please do provide the feedback.
And we learn a lot along the way as
we
well.
We sure do. Yeah, absolutely. Next week is our Church and School Administration Week. All this, I don't know how long we're going to do this, until we probably get tired of it, but we're running a regular series of shows, probably once a month, that focus on issues that are of interest to church and school administrative personnel. So next week, we're going to talk about a very simple but important topic of file sharing. How do you share files, electronic files, of course, across offices to different people? Is email still an effective way with attachments? Or we may talk about Google Docs. We'll talk about other file sharing, Web 2.0 kinds of tools that you can use. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be cool.
Maybe we need to touch a little bit on networks as well, mm-hmm. and sharing in that way, too.
Yep, absolutely.
So, be a good show.
All right. Well, Sally, didn't hear any chattering, so I'm assuming that the temperature is still above 50 there, at least.
So far, so good. I've got to rush out and turn it up.
We had a chatter-free show. So only the good stuff here. Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Williams from her album Inspirations, Beautiful Savior, with Canon in D. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Tune in next week.